Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Samson Folk, your first weekly pod of the off season. I'm coming to you from the literal sun, and my guest, Lewis Sassman, coming to you from a normal room in a normal house. And Lewis, of course, is a big deal at Raptors Republic, managing editor, and you know, a columnist over at 538, another well-loved spot for sports writing and political takes and all that kind of stuff. Lewis, you're here. I know my thing says bird rights activist, but you're Lewis Sassman, the cap expert today. So we're going to be talking about how the Raptors are set up to move around things, people, picks, whatever, in the offseason and kind of set themselves up for next year. How do you feel?
I feel pretty good. I mean, it's been several off seasons in a row where Toronto's best prospect has been the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. I mean, the last free agent Toronto signed was Damari Carroll. So I mean,
swag daddy.
Yeah, with that as the history, I'm feeling great, baby.
Okay, so first thing I want to talk about is the podcast we did, the Marathon podcast, which, by the way, anybody who's coming in to listen or watch this, go watch that. That should hold you. That should tide you over. You can listen to it in like 10-minute bits for the first month and a half.
About a Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah.
It's, if you have 4 hours to spare, it's between this or the Two Towers.
Right, but a funny wrinkle is that because it's so long, it has the most watch time of any video on the Raptors Republic channel. Just by, you know, if you're in, you're in. You know what I mean?
Yep,
so, yep. A big shout out to everybody who messaged me or tweeted at me, Swordfish, which was the little secret, like, hey, you listen to the full pod thing. But okay, Lewis, if you were going to say, or if I was going to ask you, I'm going to be the nom de plume, the avatar of the audience for this podcast. So I'm going to say, Lewis, I want the Raptors to be able to make moves. I want them to be able to improve the team. What's the first place they're looking?
Yeah, the first place they're looking is around the edges. There are definite holes on the roster. So actually, no, the first place they're looking is not where they're going to get improvement from, but what needs improvement. And so without going into exorbitant depth, they could use some shooting. They could use some finishing at the rim. They could use some self-creation. They could use some creation for teammates. Am I missing anything?
This is probably the big question that we'll do just to get the philosophical bent out of the way. Do you want them to house those things under the 6'6" to 6'9" framework?
Doesn't matter.
Do you expect them to?
I would love if the Raptors could sign a big who does all those things. They're pretty hard to find. That's a rare thing. You know, Brook Lopez, for example, not a huge name, doesn't make all this money, so ridiculously critical. Like, very, very few NBA centers shoot, protect the rim, and can post up. That, like, just those three things. That's why Jaren Jackson Jr., for example, has people seeing him as the future GOAT, not by virtue of numbers, but just he can do a lot of disparate things. And those guys are real hard to find. So yeah, you know, maybe the Raptors find somebody who's 7 feet tall, who can just go up and dunk over people. Lord knows they don't have anyone on the roster who can do that unless Precious Achiuwa's last couple months were for real. Or maybe they want a guard who can go do that, which I think is probably the most likely way they go, especially considering shooting for guards is, you know, a given. basically, unless you're Rajon Rondo, whereas it's not for bigs even today. But philosophically, I hope that they are not committed to the bit, because that would be hilarious, but definitely a lost opportunity to improve by, like, you know, I used to, when I was a kid, this is might be really making myself a huge nerd here, but I used to play like build your own deck games, like Magic the Gathering, with friends. And my one friend who owned all the cards used to make, he was very committed to symmetry. And so if he had like a zombie or something there, everything had to fit, and not, you know, like stylistic symmetry, not to make the team better, but purely aesthetic symmetry. And he lost every time we played, because he just designed the best looking decks that were not very effective. And that's what the Raptors would be if they just were like, no, has to be 6'7". You know, anything more or less, I'm sorry, but we can't have you on this team.
So there's an interesting aspect of the current ongoings of the playoffs. And so Caitlin Cooper, who is one of the best writers doing it, she noted that there isn't a rotation player in the conference finals now who is 6'10" or taller.
Maxi Kleber, yeah.
Is the 6'10" guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's really interesting after a couple of years where the bigs loomed very, very large.
Is Kevon Looney out of the rotation?
Kevon is listed at 6'9", isn't he? Or 6'10"? What? Look it up. Look it up. I'll keep talking.
Okay, you talk.
Yeah. But anyway, so this creates a really interesting parallel to the Raptors kind of saying no size, but size at the same time, except these teams, like when we look at, I don't know, Dallas or Golden State or Boston or Miami, they have pretty good guard play. And whether that's like going all the way in with Golden State and Curry and Poole and all those guys, or if it's somebody just as good as like Marcus Smart or Jalen Brunson, Spencer Dinwiddie, Kyle Lowry, Gabe Vincent, all those types of guys.
I don't want to be hyperbolic, but if you put Gabe Vincent or Max Strus, not even both, just one of the two on the Raptors, they're winning the next three championships in a row.
Gabe Vincent is great. I've been such a fan of his.
Very good.
Not yeah, even just Looney starting 6'9". This year. Looney's 6'9". There you go. Bob's your uncle. And or maybe not. Maybe Bob's your grandpa. Something like that. A lot of Bobs. So anyway, it's interesting. Would you rather the Raptors go down in size and look for more meaningful guards, or go up in size and look for a big? That's the question, by the way.
I would say probably guard, just because there's more of those guys. You know, Lonnie Walker was the name that I really honed in on in my, you know, off-season primer piece. There just aren't bigs like that on the market. They're very, you know, Larry Nance is a guy who does a lot of things. 6'9", I mean, would he play in the rotation over Chris Boucher, Thad Young? He's not the best shooter. Like, great player, and might fit his next salary underneath the, you know, the $10 million non-taxpayer mid-level exception, but I don't know if he helps the team as much as a guy like Walker. So I'm probably focused on guards, not because I think that they're necessarily better for the team, but just because that's where more available talent lies.
It's also easier to probably find shooting with guards. Yeah. I guess is another added wrinkle. And that the Raptors, so this is kind of the interesting part, is that does the strength lie with the Raptors in leaning into the talent on roster, the latent talents to kind of emerge next year? Obviously, you expect maybe Pascal Siakam to build on this season, Fred, once he's healthy, to hopefully come back and return another all-star type performance. But most importantly, you know, I just did my season review plus projection for OG Anunoby. There's a lot of stuff that he can clean up to become better. There's obviously tons of growth left for Scotty Barnes. But if you're looking for a guard, is there a chance that you would kind of put money on Malachi if you were given a shot to improve and then come back? Or would you rather use MLE or, you know, other stuff like that?
So we talked about this in the season ending pod. I think we gave him a pretty, in time hindsight, maybe a touch critical look. But best case scenario for Malachi, he gets to run some pick and rolls. His assist rate skyrockets. He starts hitting his jumpers like crazy. defensively, he remains excellent. Even if that's the case, does that help the team as much as a guy who can just get to the rim and dunk over people? I don't think. And he's not going to add that. That's impossible for Malachi Flynn to become that.
Okay, that's a great point, because I think we're in complete agreement there, is that this team doesn't lack creators. It lacks those guys who, we talked about this a lot during, you know, the no off days stuff, but somebody who, like, the ball swings to them, they see a seam to the bucket, and they might go cock it back on somebody. Oh, yeah. That's Lonnie Walker. So let's talk about Lonnie Walker. What do you think his price range might be? And let's talk about his game a little bit.
Yeah, I think Lonnie Walker is going to be very, I think he'll have suitors. I mean, freak athlete, you know, like, the guy can walk in the sky. And dudes
a
like
sky
that.
Walker,
a Skywalker. A Skywalker. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even people who haven't put it together still get paid when they can do that.
Like, and me, so, and you.
You sure about that? And so I think if he were to fall to Toronto at the full MLE, you know, $10 million, say, that would be an unbelievable coup for the Raptors. Just a huge get. I'm not in, I don't have lines on what a guy like that would cost. So I don't want to focus on that too much. I think it would be unlikely, but feasible that he falls to the Raptors. As far as his game goes, I mean, it's the type of thing you think about as like a five-tool baseball player. It's like that, the tools, man, they're juicy, they're gooey, there's all this stuff. His jumper looks great, hasn't made a lot of shots, especially this year. He's had 1 year of being a hot three-point shooter. You know, flies through the air, but this year was his first year shooting over 60% at the rim. Loves the long mid-range contested, just like adores the worst shot in basketball. Not very good at it. Defensively, low block rate, low steal rate, never really on great defensive on-offs. Doesn't draw a lot of shooting fouls. It's like the impact stuff, not there at all. But the gooey tools that we love to see, oh, baby. And you take a guy like that, you know, Gary Trent was a very good example of that in Portland. He had all these latent talents and never put them together, never really helped the team in a dramatic way. And the Raptors have found a role that suits him perfectly. It is ideal for his game. And he's become a major, major contributor. And you would hope that because there's such a barren wasteland for the type of role that Walker could fill, that he could take a similar step forward in impact like Trent took.
Okay. I think that makes sense. It's always weird with players like Walker. Malik Monk was a really good example last year. Yeah. How Monk, you know, I was surprised that he wasn't getting paid around what Luke Kennard gets paid or Kyle Kuzma, that 13 to 17, like somewhere around there. Malik Monk can get to the rim. He can shoot when he wants to. He can be pretty good at the point of attack on defense, like all that kind of stuff. And he didn't get calls from anybody. There's tons of off the court stuff and fit stuff that teams worry about, that maybe something breaks right for the Raptors and they get a guy like Lonnie or do you have any other ideas as far as somebody you might hone in on?
Absolutely. So just a few other guard names. Bring DeLon Wright home. I mean, his super funky cadence, I think, would really complement the team. But you got to, like, the one thing he's never had is just give the man a role and stick to it. Just like, don't start him outside of the rotation, for God's sakes. I think Kyle Anderson probably will get more, could help the Raptors a lot. Tyus Jones would be phenomenal. Patty Mills, I'm a little lower on, but man, that dude just running around JJ Redick screens, handoff, scampering around would open up the floor so much for Pascal and Scotty. You know, there's, if you strike out on one of these guys, that's fine. There's a lot of guys. The Raptors don't have big asks. They're not trying to sign LeBron James. They're trying to sign Damari Carroll, but for a reasonable amount of money. That shouldn't be a crazy ask.
That's a really good point. And it's something like when we talk about OG and how his role saw a big boom at the start of the year and then diminished as so many different mouths had to be fed. You're looking at a guy who, you know, if the Raptors could get him, is efficient as a connector. is efficient as a, in spot up. And, you know, as we said, punch gap, something like that. And so Tyus Jones is a guy who would bring the point of attack defense to a, another level coming off the bench. Even though he's undersized, I think there's similar applications to how he would fit, kind of similar to Fred, like really gritty point of attack, pretty good in rotation, dig downs, all that kind of stuff. Kyle Anderson is really, really intriguing and would probably fit not the same way as Thad, but in the same spirit that Thad fits.
Vision 6'9", too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's the thing, right? Is that Kyle Anderson and Tyus Jones, like if you want to go hunting in like the Grizzlies territory, because they just have this incredible wealth of great players. Like, even Xavier Tillman would be interesting on the Raptors, although he's not somebody you can sign, right? But yeah, they just have like these really interesting players at the back end. Some make it in, like Tyus Jones isn't always in the Grizzlies rotation. De'Anthony Melton isn't always in the Grizzlies rotation. It's just they have so many good players. Anderson, that would be quite significant, I think. Although yeah, he's probably priced out. I agree.
Yeah, he's making just below it now. I imagine he gets a raise.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm writing a piece right now for the site you love so well, 538. Probably
Raptors
might
Republic
be published by the time this comes out, though, about the Dallas Mavericks. And I'm writing about how they built their team around Luka, and they've just added so many guards who can just do stuff and shoot. Mm-hmm. It, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith is unbelievable. Reggie Bullock or Bullock, I'm not
Bullock.
Bullock, it's just so good. One of the main reasons why New York collapsed in my mind. Well, one of the tertiary reasons why New York collapsed was his departure.
And a vibes king.
And a vibes king.
Good guy.
Yeah, yeah. And all the way down the list, they have all of these incredible wing contributors. Even guys like the Bitcoin guy.
Oh, Spence.
Yeah. Spencer Dinwiddie. I mean, not a great starting point guard, but turns out if you ask him to just be a wing off the bench, insanely talented, creates well. Bertans just been shooting well, you know, blending in with the vibe. And teams that amass those guys really have a lot of success with the foundation in place. The Raptors have the foundation in place. I think the tinkering smart teams like Dallas, Miami, Memphis, they find guys like that year in, year out. And the Raptors really need to jump on that conveyor belt.
That's really interesting because those guys, every single player we've named, is inconsistent to some degree, especially offensively. Well, yep. Lonnie is less certain on defense than basically everybody else named.
He's, I guess, uncertain Spence on both ends.
Yeah, yeah. Time to make him certain. But anyway, Luka or Jaw, more so Luka, well, definitely more so Luka, but Luka papers over all of that inconsistency. And then if they give you what you want on defense, when they start clicking offensively, it becomes a tidal wave. And so is Pascal, like this is the question, because the Raptors had inconsistent performers trying to bust into the rotation all season long until Thad got there. Do the Raptors have not just the framework, but the talent in place to paper over to make those guys as good in Toronto as, say, they are in Dallas, San Antonio, and Memphis?
The thing is, all those guys are consistent shooters.
Yeah.
And you can be inconsistent at a lot of things. Your finishing can go in and out. You can't create for yourself at all. But if shooting especially is the one thing that game in, game out, you're gonna knock down 2 for 6 on a bad night, you know? And that's true of Bullock. That's true of Finney-Smith. Finney-Smith being a 40% shooter for like 3 years in a row. People think he's not a shooter. Dude is one of the elite marksmen.
Dorian Finney-Smith is like who people think OG is, because Dorian doesn't create, and OG definitely creates, although not at the level that a lot of people want. But Dorian is the limited creator that people think OG is, because OG is so messy in the way that he creates. Yeah. But he also brings a lot of the really high level stuff that OG does. He's been so good for so long. I wish they could get him. Obviously not, but man.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's almost a max level guy at this point. Like, he is so unbelievably good. It's crazy. But I mean, that's a whole different conversation. But I think that the difference between the Raptors bench churning and these other teams is the thing that they've tried to prioritize in terms of consistency. And to me, the Raptors have tried to prioritize defensive consistency. And it turns out, and maybe, you know, I'm sure the Raptors would disagree with me, and I'm sure a lot of really smart guys would disagree with me, but it seems to me like an inconsistent defender can survive if they're playing 10 minutes a game with the other team's star off the court. You know, Bertans has been playing 10 minutes a game for Dallas, and he has been just fine on defense because he's playing the lowest level leverage minutes. And if the other team wants to rejig their entire rotations to get their star attacking Bertans minutes, just put him on, sit him on the bench, and then they've ruined their whole rotation. It's, you know, to have a guy be an inconsistent defender is survivable, even in the playoffs, if they're not playing a lot. But to have a guy not be able to shoot worth a lick seems to have been a disaster for Toronto's bench. And that's where Yuta Watanabe comes in, because he was one of the most consistent bench defenders we've seen in the past few years for the Raptors. And yet he could not impact winning this season because his shooting, his scoring wasn't there.
And so of that grouping, Lonnie is your guy because of expectation that he might fall in, or of Kyle, Tyus, Lonnie, Reggie, that's the guy you think presents the highest upside?
I think highest upside. I'm like all those guys, Lonnie's the one who's going to go dunk on you. And the rim pressure, even more than shooting, in my eyes, was the biggest issue for Toronto. That when Scotty was hurt and Pascal was just dragging the Raptors possession after possession and Fred was hurt, they had no, like, Pascal would swing the ball and there's just no one who could just take two dribbles and put the ball in the net. And my God, that is important in the NBA.
Yeah, that's creating breaking points where the defense doesn't have to just slide and recollect themselves. And it's not just guys switching spots along the arc. It's guys having to travel back into the paint. And yeah.
And you saw that with Phoenix. When Phoenix lost, I mean, everyone can criticize Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and rightfully so. But all those other guys, you know, Ayton, Jay Crowder, Bridges, Shamet, not one person was just putting the ball on the floor and dunking over someone. They just couldn't do it. And the best teams right now have a lot of guys who can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely interesting to see so many teams cycle through these possessions. And Phoenix is a really good example, especially against Dallas. If Dallas is going to lift the guy from the paint up to the free throw line, push these guys, you know, parallel.
Yeah, just hedge everything.
You know, push them parallel, the ball squirts out, you start from above the break again. I think there were so many possessions that Boston got against Milwaukee, particularly when Giannis wasn't playing heavily on ball, but also when we're looking at Phoenix against Dallas, that there's these guys who they just can't break past that initial wave. So everything stays outside the arc or above the break. And that's the Raptors' problem against the Celtics when they played. Kyle Lowry was the only guy breaking through that line of defense. And the Celtics play a very similar style even this year.
Yeah. I mean, people who can do that always end up in a higher spot in the rotation than they'd be. Terrence Mann's a great example. I mean, he came out of nowhere to the Clippers just because he punched through every gap. It's really important.
He's probably my favorite role player in the NBA. Terrence Mann, he can do anything.
You have so many favorite role players. It's out of... So you don't think Markel Fultz is a role player then? You think he's
a star, baby.
Yeah.
That's a star. Star Kel Fultz, dude. Okay.
I mean, he would... Let's not get it twisted. He would be... Just have like I would if I was Masai Ujiri, I would move heaven and earth, like just the perfect player on the Raptors.
I'm saying, you think it's bright in here? It's because I have a Markel poster opposite of me. Okay, this guy is shining out there. But okay, I feel like we'll take a break. We'll touch on how the Raptors can adjust their books outside of just the mid-level exception, non-taxpayer mid-level exception, and we'll be right back. But I got to read for you advertisement from Jack Health. So you want to get to the top of your game? Jack Health at www.jack.health is an online service for men's health that handles the doctor's appointment, the prescription, and the shipping, which, by the way, Lewis, it is free. All you need to do is stay home and relax. They've got stuff for sexual health, daily health, hair and skin, you name it. Order what you want, fill out some questions, and get it shipped straight to you. Skip having to lay out all your medical issues in the clinic waiting room and keep your private business private. Free shipping and easy prescriptions. Boost your game and do it all from the privacy of your own home at www.jack.health. Okay, listener, we've got you all figured out with jack.health or just Jack Health. You know, not everything's a website, but I tell you this much. We haven't figured out what the Raptors are going to do outside of the mid-level exception, the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So, Lewis, what other money is on the books? And actually, maybe we should have started out by asking how much money is on the books right now?
Yeah,
what's the Raptors cap sheet?
Probably a good place to start. So the Raptors are basically operating as a cap-tote team, right? They have the entire core in place. Pascal, Fred, OG, Gary, Scotty, those guys, you know, Precious, those guys all have contracts extending beyond this offseason. And because they have a lot of those mid-level guys, Ken Burch is a good example, they have no cap space. They are operating below the luxury tax. It might get tight if they use all their available tools this offseason. Basically, even if they renounce every bird right, they you know, don't offer for Chris or for Thad, they, you know, everything, they have like $7 million in cap space, which is not, that's less than the Emily. So they are capped out. That's what they're dealing with. For their own free agents, Chris Boucher, Thad Young, Yuta Watanabe. What's going on over there?
It's bird rights activist. You know, that's my name, my display name.
I never put the pieces together.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It's pretty good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. I was going to make it Yamana Bird. You can fly over the cap to re-sign them, but that was too long.
Much too long. But so their own guys, they have bird rights. So they can go over the cap to sign Chris Boucher, Thad Young, Yuta Watanabe. As well, you know, they're two-way guys, they can, the guys in-house, they can re-sign them. But if they're trying to pluck someone else out of the free agent pool, they only have two tools with which to do it. So those tools we've discussed, one, the non-taxpayers MLE, which is just over $10 million. That's just something every team has. If you are in the luxury tax, you have the taxpayers MLE, slightly lower. And then the other tool is the biannual exception. It's just over $4 million, another tool that comes by annually. The Raptors have, in past years, often broken up those tools into different chunks. You know, guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Stanley Johnson, they've given a small piece. I think even Ken Burch, if I'm not wrong, but I might be. They've given, you know, pieces and chunks of those tools rather than spending it all in one place. But that is an option. They can spend it all in one place.
Okay,
that's the tools.
Those are the tools. Okay. And welcome to the start of the podcast.
Yeah. Well, welcome. This is
Yeah. So that tool, whether it's broken up, whether it's whole, do you have any designs for how you'd like to see it used, that biannual exception, which, as you said in your piece, isn't any smart maneuvering. It's just, hey, it's the biannual exception. It's here.
Yeah. I mean, we've discussed it before, right? I think Lonnie Walker would be ideal. I think Bryn Forbes, Patty Mills would probably be pretty. Oh, you biannual. We said MLE for biannual. Yeah. Bryn Forbes, Patty Mills maybe might fit in there. You know, $4 million isn't a whole chunk of change to deal with. Today's NBA, you know, anyone who's shown success in the NBA who has any promise of growing is generally making more money than that. And so, you know, realistically, kind of just a shooter. Can you get a shooter? You know, Matt Thomas is a good example. They've already kicked those tires. You're not going to try to reacquire Matt Thomas, but a player of that success level and ilk.
Okay, so I find it interesting that would you just want a big body, maybe? Not even shooting, but is there, you know, a game in February where it's like you're getting close to the All-Star break, one of Precious or OG or Scottie, Pascal, whoever is facing down a matchup with like Jokic or Embiid or even DeAndre Ayton maybe, and you don't want him to just get smashed around. You walk out a guy, a big bumbling fella, to go take some fouls and to go, you know, put some pounds out there. Is that, do you think that's kind of a short-sighted use of it? Or are you hunting for shooting with maybe the upside of like, hey, maybe this guy can do a little something off the dribble, or, you know?
Realistically, whoever you sign is not going to be in the rotation the full season. They'll pop in and out. And so that's not any less, you know, long looking than signing a shooter. I think it's totally realistic to go after a big, actually have an ideal big candidate. Patrick Bryant, Thomas Bryant. Thomas Bryant, Washington, I think kind of got squeezed out of Washington's center rotation just because they had a bunch of guys.
Weird center rotation, right? By the way.
Yeah.
Because they had Gafford on the poison pill. And they stopped playing him to play Bryant, but then Bryant came out later too, even though, and the whole time Gafford was the guy they should have been playing. It was really weird.
Yeah. And I think as a result of that, it's one of those types of guys who might fall through the cracks for other teams, because he's actually a really, really talented player. I mean, to lose your minutes to Gafford is not a bad thing. Gafford is an exceptional basketball player. I think Bryant could be more than just a big body for the Raptors. He would start some games. He's not going to fit under that 4 million, but he might fit under the 10. So, you know, big bodies are definitely acquirable. There's some guys out there. You're not getting Rudy Gobert out of the free agency pool, but you can look a little more robustly than, say, a Boban.
So let's lean into what Lewis likes. So, would you rather, I know you said you liked Lonnie a lot, but if you had to choose between going for that high upside swing in the draft on like a creator, somebody with shooting, maybe some off the bounce stuff, like we've seen Desmond Bane, for example, right? 30th. And the Raptors, I think, are slotted in at 32 because the second round picks are static. And so it's really interesting to think, like, would you rather swing on a big in the draft, or would you rather swing on a guard? And how does that affect what you would try to do in free agency?
Yeah, I would rather swing on a guard. Guard to wing. I mean, it seems to me like explosive athlete types can slip further. You saw that with Pascal and OG. You know, hyper-talented bigs. Still, even though we say that this is not a bigs league anymore, they still go pretty high in the draft. And a guy like Nikola Jokic, you know, obviously who slipped, very rare, especially today when every team has these outrageous international scouting departments. If you're gigantic, you just get drafted higher. That hasn't changed in the league. And so, you know, I've said his name many times, maybe two times in pieces. Bryce McGowan's would be just like an ID, just quick twitch athlete with a stroke. Maybe he becomes Desmond Bane. You never know. But it's you know, draft for talent, potential, but fit as well. Because if the guy can't get in the rotation, like Malachi Flynn, for example, they drafted best player available, and the rotation wasn't there. They drafted under the philosophy of best player available. Yeah. And it just they never got to give him time to develop. And you've seen that, you know, failure with the Raptors several times. Bruno Caboclo, they started the 905 because they weren't able to control his development. And being able to offer guys NBA minutes is really important for development. And I think you can do that a little more for a guy like McGowan's than you can for a big.
Okay. That's really interesting, because, you know, who's to say what a person likes and dislikes, but Okay, so capped out, but you can trade. You can do all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. The Raptors presumably have some guys on the roster who could be potentially moved, sign and trade stuff. Like, I honestly think it'd be really tough to replace Chris Boucher.
Yeah.
Especially considering they have his bird rights. Thaddeus Young maybe like is less certain, but also I think Thaddeus Young, there's some wisdom in saying you bring him back as well. He showed quite well, I think, especially, you know, as he got more reps and stuff. But guys like Malachi, guys like Kim, they probably have a less certain future with the Raptors. And if you were going to look for maybe that long big who can shoot like Zeke Nnaji in Denver or something like that, maybe you start looking at packages. Is there anything that you had in mind that like makes you kind of go, it could be, you know, maybe you want the Rudy trade, maybe you want the Donovan Mitchell trade or whatever, but is there anything that kind of interests you as far as just getting guys that Lewis likes and maybe could be had?
So this was something I was going to flip back to you, because I know that you, as much as I, have crushes around the league that you think would succeed in the system. I don't think a blockbuster would be in the Raptors' best interests at all right now. So I agree with you that, you know, Zeke Nnaji would be a type of guy. Aiden, unbelievable writer, basketball guy, suggested Jalen Smith at the trade deadline. That's a little less likely now that he's already on a new team.
Yeah.
But I really love that idea. Minnesota has some unbelievable scoring talent. I mean, Minnesota has guys who aren't in the rotation who would be
Noel.
Like, yeah, that's exactly where I was going. Jalen Noel, Naz Reid as well. Those guys, either of them would be extremely significant additions to the Raptors. And if that requires sending off a first round pick, even future first for either of them, I think that would be worth it. But the other thing about this is the Raptors are not going to pay the luxury tax. That's just, they don't think they're winning a championship. They won't do it. And so they are right around the line where if they use both of their tools, the MLE, the biannual, paid their draft picks and filled out the roster, they would be just at the luxury tax line. No flexibility, maybe even over. I haven't done the exact math, but it's like right there. And I think if that were the case, Malachi Flynn and Kem Birch, who you actually mentioned, are quite likely to be traded with probably picks attached to get rid of their salaries, because the Raptors are going to be ducking if they do end up trying to trade for another rotation guy. How about you? Do you have trade targets you think would work well?
Yeah, I think like Noel, I went through a phase, I think in February, where I started looking at his film. I saw a lot of manipulation and just, you know, you go to this like cleaning the glass or something, you see that points per shot attempt just pops right off the page. You're like, holy smokes, this guy was efficient. He creates his own shot. He gets to the bucket. He shoots it. It's just like, how does this guy not have a spot? What's happening in Minnesota? And Nas, I mean, 2 years ago, there was guys like Tariq Black and Naz Reid and Wenyen Gabriel who are all operating under the same like, oh, they've got hustle or whatever. But Naz was the one who started popping off with a bunch of skills. And I think Minnesota probably likes him way, way too much at this point. It'd have to be something substantial, I would guess. Yeah. But Noel, I mean, why not, right? If a guy's not getting play, which is kind of the same idea with Gafford at the deadline, which was ruined by his poison pill, but it's like, why is this guy inexplicably not getting time on the court? So you kick the tires on those kind of guys. Cause like, well, how does the team like them? Do they value them? Is there some sort of get you can go after here? So yeah, guys like Noel, maybe Brissett. Brissett is maybe like an interesting guy to come back around or something like that. Jalen Smith, if he didn't pop in Indiana, yeah, that's a good one. But yeah, they probably like him too much now.
You mentioned Gabe Vincent.
Gabe, yeah, he's been good for a couple years and he's getting a lot of shine this year, but he's been this guy. It's just kind of starting to show. I saw like Duncan Robinson, you know, if there were a way to do like salary, if the Heat were punting on him, are you interested? Because that's long and shooting.
I mean, just run them around. You know, they don't have a guy who they can just run handoffs with and get a good shot. That like just give Scotty the ball on the elbow extended and just keeper, run a shooter. Yeah, just run a shooter dynamic. Over him. Yeah. They don't have that at all. And Duncan Robinson, for all of his limitations in the playoffs this year and lost playing time, I think could be someone who is available for a lot less now than he was a year ago, but is not a worse player. It's just a different situation for him on the team. And so, you know, if Duncan Robinson just required maybe sign and trade plus Kem, you can't do that. You can't add contracts together with sign and trade, right?
Oh, yeah. This is where...
If you were able to put it together without sacrificing one of the six or seven rotation guys, why not, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be really interesting, because that's what you want to do, basically, is you don't win trades or you don't make good trades by trading for, like, that's why the Raptors, Thad turned out to be pretty, like, I don't think it's an overwhelming return for a first round pick, but Thad turned out to be, you know, better probably with the Raptors than a lot of the sexy options at the time as per cost, because the Raptors didn't go after the guy who was trending at the trade deadline. And there are guys who trend and their value goes up, and those are rarely the guys who are had on good deals or in good trades. And so, you know, maybe a guy like Duncan, if it falls correctly, it's always going for the undervalued guys who are that way because of circumstance, not because of loss of skill or will or anything like that. So, yeah. But I guess to go back to the start, like we circled on Noel, Zeke Nagy, those types of guys, both inexplicably, well, Nagy less inexplicable because, you know, Denver, their big situation is kind of very firm with Jokic eating up a lot of stuff. But Noel and Nagy are both really interesting to look at. You know, Lonnie Walker, Kyle Anderson, all those types of guys, I think, you know, in the signing aspect are all very, very intriguing. Yeah.
There's very few sexy names, but at the same time, a lot of the around the edges names could end up being extremely sexy for Toronto. And that's just because the team has a real void of talent in one specific area that most NBA teams have a plethora of. And because of that, guys who are maybe middling talents on some teams can look exceptional on the Raptors. Gary Trent's a great example.
I was about to say.
And I wouldn't call him middling. You know, he's better than that on any team. But the performance that he put together this year for the Raptors, I'm not sure if he duplicates that in any other environment in the league.
A weird combination of carte blanche to operate as if he had the skill set of a guy like Devin Booker, you know, that's, although less pick and roll chops, but just these huge dribble handoffs at the top of the arc, like, do what you want with it, pal. Any shot you take is a good shot. We're willing to have it. But as we saw, like, his shot making is maybe roughly at the same level as it was with next to Dame and CJ, but he didn't have the same agency to do all that kind of stuff. And yeah, he great year with the Raptors. No shade at Gary Trent at all.
Yeah. And you give, I think, any one of the many names that we've gone through, you give them that same, you know, we haven't talked about DeLon. We mentioned him, but if DeLon Wright were to be playing, say, 22 minutes off the bench, and you just give him the ball, you let him run around off of it, you give him handoffs, you let him cut, attack the offensive glass, that dude is going to win his minutes. He just flat out is. He would look unbelievable on this iteration of the Raptors. And there's a lot of guys who, you know, might not be really exciting when you sign them, but would really outplay the contracts that they would receive because of the environment this team has.
Do you think DeLon's lack of activity off the ball, for, you know, lack of, I don't know, better way to just sum it up, would be a problem on the Raptors, like offensively especially? Because that jumper has stuck for a little while, and then it's gone and stuck and gone and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I mean, he's a better cutter than people give him credit for, and he hits the offensive glass. is that not enough on this Raptors team to be better than what they already have?
Well, yeah, okay. From that point of view, yes. Like, yeah, if you're looking at a guy who's coming in for that eighth, ninth position during the regular season, maybe you kind of whittle those types of situations down in the playoffs. But yeah, that's like Delano Banton played a lot of minutes this last season.
He would take Banton's minutes.
Yeah. And
my God, he would.
He's kind of like supercharged Banton, actually. Yeah.
And Banton played extremely well. He was phenomenal for Toronto. He was great. Well, being just a much worse player than DeLonray.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's I guess the last thing we'll talk about then, with Banton, Barnes, Siakam, Fred, OG. Is there any reason why the Raptors would just kind of like punt on anything and kind of,
what do
you mean
by that?
Well, what I mean is, like, you can try and sell picks. You can try and, like, save money that way. Like, is there any chance of that, do you think? If they expect progress from guys like Banton, maybe David Johnson from...
Kind of. Yeah. I think that they might see the talent in-house as quite high. Maybe it gets down to 32. And they say, you know what? You know, there's no one here that we love. The people we like are still going to be available at 45, you know, when the draft is over. They might trade down, save a couple bucks, maybe try to ship off Ken Birch. And look, I want to add, I think you and I both hate talking about players as numbers, as contracts. And I think Ken Birch is a really fabulous guy and a really talented basketball player who helps in a lot of ways. It just so happens that his contract is in a situation where the Raptors might want to get rid of it and wouldn't get good things back. That's life, and I hope that's everyone knows that's not us criticizing Cam as a person or a player. Mm-hmm. Probably should have led with that caveat as well if we're going to do this type of pod. But
if we're more bullish, I don't think we use the classic terminology that people use either. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm not super worried about it.
But you know, I think it's a really possible scenario where they use $7 million from the MLE. They don't touch the biannual and they trade down in the draft and they say, great job, everyone. Like, awesome job at work. Let's go run it back. Why not? Save some money, get under the luxury tax, keep flexibility, and let the talent in-house continue to develop. Because we kind of touched on this earlier. There's only so many rotation minutes to go around. And then on top of that, there's only so many rotation minutes to go around for development. And that's why you see teams get stuck in losing slumps. Sacramento. If you have only lottery talent on the team, you're going to lose forever. Because not everyone can develop. That's just impossible. You need structure and development within that. And the Raptors may look at the team they already have. They say, structure's great. Love it. Development, we have guys who we are high on. Maybe Jalen Harris comes back. We haven't discussed him, but that's possible.
Really, really rough year.
Yeah, it did not play well in Spain or Italy.
Italy.
Yeah, Italy did not play well in Italy. But you know that he looked really good in Toronto before an unfortunate circumstance making him leave the NBA. Maybe he's part of their plans. We just don't know. And they have a lot of guys who they might want to see get touches. And if that happens, they say, look, we don't have the development touches for a guy like Noel. And so let's run it back.
The return of Nando DiColo, maybe.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, let's do, just so people have it in one place. Actually, you know what? I'll clip this for Twitter so people can respond to it accordingly. And they'll have it in one spot so that people can kind of, you know, do whatever they want with it. If you, the viewer, the listener, want to kind of come up with your own, like, oh, hey, what are we going to do here? So let's do, how much money do they have in mid-level? How much money do they have biannual? How far away are they from luxury tax? How far are they away from tax? And what trade exceptions do they currently have on the books? If you can give us the rundown.
The tools, once more, all collected together. Mm-hmm. Cap space, zero. exceptions, they have $10 million in the non-taxpayer MLE, four in the biannual exception. Those can't be combined, by the way, for one player. They have two trade exceptions. They have $3 million for Kyle Lowry. They've already used some of the Kyle Lowry trade for Eubanks. And then they have $5 million for Goran Dragic. Again, those can't be combined either with each other or with players. So you can't, package a $10 million salary with the $5 million exception, bring in a $15 million. That can't be done. Those are other ways to bring in small salary guys. Luxury cap space, they have $33 million away. But they are going to be extremely tight on that. I mean, if Boucher gets what he might, because he could get a significant raise, they might not be able to bring back Thad Young, for example, because they're going to be so close to luxury. That's unlikely, but certainly a possibility. And that is really a hard limit for them. They won't be going over that this year.
Okay. And the MLE, the non-taxpayer MLE, is what is the total of it?
10.4.
10.4, and biannual is 4.
4.01 or something.
4.01. 100, what is 10,000 to a couple guys like us? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That feels like the podcast. Listener, if you feel aggrieved, if you feel angry at what we've said here, I urge you to know that we said everything here with care, okay? And we're not married to our opinions.
No, but look,
Lewis did bring the factual stuff.
Everyone's going to be aggrieved because we didn't talk about a single exciting off-season event. Like, not one thing we mentioned was like, boom, headline worthy. They're not trading for Rudy Gobert or Donovan Mitchell. I'm sorry.
Now I can actually make the thumbnail, trading for Rudy Gobert, ? Yeah, that feels like, if you were listening to this and you like what Lewis and I say, good, I'm glad. And, but at the very least, you heard all the nitty gritty details. If you're looking for them in written form, go to RaptorsRepublic.com or just Lewis's Twitter. And you can find his big off-season primer piece kind of setting up all these numbers and more eloquently saying everything that we said here, basically, without any of my verbose interruptions as far as those go. So you can enjoy that in the written form. Lewis, before we get out of here, are you wanting to plug anything?
I'm going to do a reverse plug. And I think things like this are... actually extremely likely that listeners will have more creative ideas than we do. And so please share your trade and signing ideas if they are realistic, because it is quite often that we miss fun ones that other people think of. So I'm actually quite excited to hear what people have to say about that.
The people are more fun than we are. That's much more that fun. Is an accurate
reverse statement. Plug.
Reverse plug. That's the second time you did that. That you did this last time. You said, no, listener. Hey, good for you, pal. You were yes. here the whole time. You're the real hero. You're just, he's a man of the people. I see what it is.
I'm a union rights activist.
Oh, that's the way to my heart, brother. That's right there. Okay, listener, I hope you enjoyed this. Or viewer as well. I hope everybody who listened and viewed enjoyed it. Whenever Zarar puts this up on the YouTube page, I hope, expeditiously. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. I'm Samson Folk. That's Lewis Sassman. This has been the Raptors Weekly Podcast. The next episode will be with Sean Woodley, an unknown date currently, but we'll be talking about the most fun storylines of the offseason. So if you're looking for fun, maybe I'll be more fun that time too. But thanks for tuning in. It has been an absolute pleasure, whether you got into this in the morning or at night. Have a blessed day and goodbye.